I'm going to talk about these scripts. So if you want to redeem a locked fund from a transaction A in transaction B, you basically can do that if the execution of the concatenated script of the redeem script of transaction B and the lock script of transaction A, if executed, returns the value 2 and a stack depth of 1. What stack depth means, I will explain shortly. So the simplified view is that a lock script on the Bitcoin blockchain is basically a verification algorithm, and the redeem script is the input data for that verification. How does that work? Scripts are basically bytecoded forth-like programs that operate on a stack. So anyone ever programmed in forth? Wow, very good. So any forth programmer will immediately recognize what is going on here. So you have an instruction set, and this is not really complete because I want to put it on one line. So you have numbers, of course. You have true and false, 0 and 1, and you have the numbers up to 16 as bytecode instructions to push that integer to the stack. You can push bytes, which actually can be anything. There is no semantics associated with that. These can be strings, these can be hexadecimal numbers, multi-precision integers, arbitrary precision integers, and stuff like that. So you can push data onto the stack. You have commands operating on the stack, and this is basically exactly for anyone who knows forth. It's immediately understandable what's going on here. So you can drop stack items, you can duplicate them, you can swap them, all that stuff. Then you have hash operations, which basically operate on the top level stack element and do the hashing and push the result back to the stack. So that's easy to understand. Then you have check instructions, which are very important for the Bitcoin transactions in general, in the normal way to say. So where you can check signatures, where you can check multi-signatures, stuff like that. That's basically predefined by the Bitcoin engine. How these instructions operate, what arguments they take, what they push back onto the stack, and stuff like that. So on the Bitcoin blockchain, these commands work on signatures and public keys for the elliptic curve cryptography used by Bitcoin. You have math operations, as you would expect. You have conditions, you have logical operations, Boolean operations. So it's pretty complete. You can compare things. So you have an instruction set, and you can write programs in this language, and you split them into parts. As I said before, you have a lock script, which is the verification algorithm, and you have a redeem script, which is the input data for the verification. Why doesn't this move now? Okay. So usually people do not care about these kind of scripts. I mean, if you use Bitcoin, you use a wallet software, and this wallet software usually is responsible for taking care of this part, unlocking or redeeming funds from a transaction, or locking them for a future transaction. So people usually don't care about that. So you have 3 or 4 usually things. So the first one is pay to public key, which basically means your lock script says, unlock this fund from a transaction if someone can present a correct public key and the correct signature over a certain data to be verified. So the lock script is the public key that is going to receive the script, and the check sig instruction, and the redeem script is just the signature over certain data. I will not go into details here. So if this is executed, the check sig instruction takes 2 elements from the stack, the public key and the signature, and returns either true or false. So if you run this, you end up with a stack either having one top-level element of either true or false. And if it's true, then the transaction fund is unlocked. Otherwise, it does not work. And will actually be rejected by the miners. They will not take these transaction into the block and into the blockchain. This was the first script type that was ever used on the blockchain. So the first transactions all used this pay-to-public key. And then someone came up with, isn't this a security problem? If we reveal the public key and someone can break the public key, then we are all fucked. They came up very early with a different thing, which is called pay-to-public key hash. So the lock script, which is basically visible on the blockchain, the very moment you lock the funds for someone, now you only have a hash value of the public key available there on the lock script, and this value of the hash, that's basically what we usually call a Bitcoin address, or we can derive a Bitcoin address from this hash value. So now the redeem script, of course, has to push two values. It has to push the signature and the public key. So this is the top level element on the stack. This is the second element. Dupe means it's duplicating it. It's duplicating the public key. It hashes the public key, compares the hash value to this value. And if that matches, if it does not match, the execution gets aborted. If it's equal, then it does the checksig. So we have SIG and PK on the stack as well, checking the signature. If everything is fine, the funds are unlocked. Later on, people came and said, well, it would be even nice to hide the semantics and the specifics of the unlock script, because this is public and everyone knows how the logic behind it works. Now you can actually put the lock script into the redeem script, which means you are not revealing how transactions are unlocked or how funds are unlocked. But you say, okay, I have the hash value of a lock script that needs to be equal to a predefined value, which basically also is a Bitcoin address, that one that usually starts with 3 instead of 1. This one at least starts with 1. And the Bitcoin engine, if it sees this kind of lock script, it knows how to do that. It knows that the lock script is part of the redeem script and executes it separately from that. And one more interesting thing, we come to that later, is the pay to null, which means pay to no one. Which is a thing where you can basically attach data to a transaction. So you say return, then it's not redeemable, and then you can put up to 73 bytes, I think, of data in here to be attached to the transaction. Of course, Bitcoin had a certain development, so we have the SegWit and Taproot things, which introduced new type of lock scripts, but I will not go to that into detail. Just to give you an overview, if you scan the whole blockchain and analyze every transaction and every lock script on the blockchain, you see how these type of scripts are used. So as I said, it started out with the pay to public key. And nobody is using that nowadays anymore, not really. Most people nowadays still use, and I think it's about 2/3 of all transactions use pay to public key hash. That's still the one something addresses in Bitcoin. You have an increasing part that is going to be for pay to script hash. You still have some pay to nobody, where it's just data attached to the thing. And you have increasing numbers of SegWit processes going on as well. So this is the block height Here it's not the date, so and you see it's not going to the very end because the data I collected is a little bit older, like a year or something. So you have an impression how these things are used. And as I said, people are normally not involved in doing things because the wallet software is responsible for managing these kinds of scripts. But if you can program something, people will. You know, they write their own wallet software basically, or do transactions with short code snippets in Python or Go or whatever. And this can, of course, lead to unintentional fuck-ups, because if people are doing programming, they make errors and mistakes. So let's have a look at what's going on there. This was the very first transaction that got fucked up. So you see what happened here? It looks like a pay-to-public key hash, but the checksig thing was repeated 4,002 times. So, of course, these funds have never been unlocked because nobody came up with the script to do that. So the question is, and it's only a 1.01 Bitcoin, so it's not very much, but anyway, could this fund be recovered by the legit owner, by the one who really has the private key associated with the public key hash here? What do you think? Can it be done? It can. So your redeem script simply is, you push the signature and the public key, but you duplicate the two top items 4,001 times. And if you do that, this script would actually unlock the funds locked here. Now let's do an estimate. Is it worth it? So the transaction size of the redeem script will be around 4,300 bytes. And if I assume that's a high value, I know, but if we assume that we have 100 satoshis per byte in the transaction to pay, that's still below the locked funds, so you can get like this out of it. It's 200, 300 euros or something. So the legit owner can actually recover the funds if he wants, or he wants. The next one, what happened here? This also looks like a public pay-to-public key hash, but the hash value is zero. So good luck. Find a public key that hashes to zero, or find a private key where the public key hashes to zero, and then you can actually unlock this. And this would be worthwhile. It's $2.8 million locked in this transaction. So maybe you can try. I consider it burned. This one, what happened here? Also looks like a pay-to-public key hash transaction, but there is a zero at the end, which means push false to the stack. So now even if you have the correct public key and private key to do the signature, checksig will return one, push one to the stack, but then the last instruction will push zero to the stack, and now two conditions are not met. The stack depth is not one, and the top value is not true. So, locked. This one is interesting. I mean, it's only Neil who can probably decode this kind of script. Does it look like a well-formed fourth program? What do you think, Neil?
Not sure.
No. Well, as I said, all these instructions are bytecodes. Really? So let's look at the hex code for each of these instructions. And you see it's 73637269704, decoding to ASCII script. So what happened? I mean, I can only make assumptions, but someone took a manual on how to do lock scripts, and the manual said script, script here, right? That was basically taken literally. So very easy to say, burned. But people are also experimenting. So you find things like this on the chain as a lock script. It says min and then a number equal. Could that be easily unlocked? What is min doing? Min is taking the top two elements from the stack and pushes the smaller one back to the stack. And then you say, okay, compare that with the given value, and if they are equal, then you're set. Let me check. I had that. Just a second.
If the stack start out empty?
Then min does not work. I mean, then basically the preconditions for executing the min.
The unlock script populates the stack, I think the question was.
No, the redeem script populates. The redeem script populates the stack. Yeah. So this is a nice thing here. It's basically where you can write scripts. So let's say the unlock script looks like this. You have op min 23. Check verify. Oop. Equal, sorry. So you see what happens. This one is saying, okay, try to read from an empty stack, right? So the unlock script, the redeem script, how would that look like? It requires two elements on the stack. Let's start with 0, 0. So now you see the result is basically only one element on the stack, but it's false. So 0, 0 will certainly not unlock this kind of script. Any ideas what will?
23, 24.
Okay. So by just looking at the lock script, which is basically giving you the thing you need to know to find out what values you have to push to the stack to actually unlock this fund. It was on the blockchain, but it was redeemed by someone very early on, so there's no money to be made here. But anyway, you see how easy it can be.
How much was the puzzle worth?
Sorry?
How much was the puzzle worth?
Not much. A very, very, very small amount, and it's years ago. I mean, really, years ago. At that time, probably a few cents or something. People were just playing around. The next one, what is this? It tries to look complicated, but it actually is not. Depth is returning the numbers of elements on the stack. Then you hash that value with SHA-256 two times, with SHA-160, which is SHA-256 with RIPE 160. You SHA it again, you SHA it one, you do MD-160 and ask for equal. So this is also easily recoverable because you say, okay, I put one element on the stack, then I know what the depth will be. Then I check that and check if it's equal to what I expect. So this is, people were just playing around on how to do that, trying to hide their unlocking and locking or redeeming scripts, just to play around with alternative scripts on the blockchain. So this one is easy, interesting as well. So it says you have two elements on the stack, you duplicate them both, you add them and check if the sum is a certain value, and you subtract the two and check if the difference is a certain value. This is usually easy to recover, assuming that both integers have the same parity, of course, right? You cannot solve the puzzle if these two numbers have a different parity. One is odd, one is even, wouldn't work. This one is to be found, and these transaction numbers, you can look them up on the blockchain if you want. So this is it's using if, else, and conditionals in the script. Now you have to know how conditionals on the blockchain script work. They are basically toggling a flag. So if checks if the top element is true, and if it's true, this branch is executed, else is executing the rest of it, but the next else is actually toggling this flag again. So let's assume the value on the stack is true when the script executes. Then this one is executed, one. This part is skipped, but this one is executed as well. And as we know, return with binary data attached cannot unlock any funds. It's a locked transaction. But if you start with zero or false on the stack, then only this branch gets executed, pushes the one, basically true to the stack, and skips the rest, and is a valid redeem script. Let's see what we have here. Oh yeah, this one is really interesting. It says, if the depth of the redeem script, if the elements on the stack for the redeem script is one, then execute this part, else execute this part. The second part is basically what you expect from a pay to public key hash, so where you have two elements on the stack, the signature and the public key. So that's the branch if the depth is not one. But if the depth is one, it hashes two times and check if the result of the hash is equal to a certain value. Okay, now before that we have something like this. It is pushing a value to the stack, but immediately drops the value. So it's basically stack neutral. This kind of construct is often used to attach data like hints for the redeem script. So let's look at what this is. I mean, by just looking at the hex string, it's easy to see this is ASCII. So let's decode that. And it says, name of Nakakamoto. Who the fuck is Nakakamoto? Sata Tatoshi? So that was my first try, Sata Tatoshi. But actually, that was just a spelling error here. So the redeem script is Satoshi. So if you put Satoshi as a string onto the stack and execute this lock script, you can unlock the fund.
What's the purpose of the if-else?
Sorry?
What's the purpose of the if-else there?
Because you can either unlock the funds by having Satoshi on the stack, or by having a normal pay-to-public key hash, a signature and a public key on the stack. So even if you don't know the answer to this puzzle, you can still unlock the script. Yeah. So why talking about scripts at all? I mean, this was funny things, people, that was happening on the blockchain, but is there any use of this beyond having fun? Yes, it is, because you can actually use scripts to improve the anonymity of, or better, have anonymity than just of pseudonymity, because nowadays, basically, fund transfers are always between Bitcoin addresses, right? So that's what forensics is operating upon. So they try to figure out who owns which Bitcoin addresses and make associations here and to find out how funds were transferred and flowing on. But of course, you have to think what will happen to Bitcoin if ECC gets broken. Like, say, someone comes up with a quantum computer and is able to basically take the public key and compute the private key out of that. That means you can get rid of this thing because you can write scripts that do not depend on elliptic curve cryptography. Or you can implement very custom mechanisms for fund transfers. That's what people actually did. That was one of the reasons why they introduced the pay to script hash transactions at all, because then you can define your own logic on how you want funds to be unlocked. Certain different conditions, like it's only spendable after a certain time, it requires a certain condition to actually unlock it. But the most useful thing, whenever like breaking the quantum computer thingy happens, you can use this as your lock script, which basically says only someone who can provide a value that, when hashed with SHA-256, returns a certain result. And if that is equal, then the fund transfer will work. The drawback here, of course, is that the sender can actually access the funds later on as well. So it's not just the receiver, so you have to trust the sender to not retract the funds afterwards. But it would circumvent basically all these things I was talking about when we use elliptic curve cryptography.
Is that hash quantum safe?
Sorry?
Is that hash function quantum safe?
Well, we assume that hash functions are quantum safe, at least. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this SHA-256 is basically two times. So you have your value, you hash it with SHA-256, and then you hash the result of that with SHA-256 again. So it's a concatenated hash. Yeah, it's considered pretty safe. You can't, just as a note, you can't use hash 160 for this, which would be nice because it would result in a smaller hash value, which means you're spending less bytes in a transaction and pay less fees. But you can't do that because the Bitcoin engine actually has this kind of script, as I said before, predefined for pay-to-script hash things. So you have to use hash 256 or any other hash except for hash 160. So now people, I said people can attach data to the blockchain, and people do that a lot. So this pay to no one has approximately 6 gigabytes of the Bitcoin blockchain is basically attached data. It's data that is not related to any transaction. It's just putting information into the blockchain. And people use that for anything. You can attach URLs, text, private keys. Private keys? What the fuck? Yes, you can. Like this one. You can find this private key on the blockchain, and it has an address like this. One Facebook. And if you look at the address in the Blockchain Explorer, you see it's in use today. Wow. People are obviously using it to hide transactions. So basically, they use this address to lock funds and retrieve the funds in the same block, so nobody can basically intervene. But it's basically watching and say, well, this funds went through Facebook. I don't know. Of course, you can beat these guys, right? How? Just give them more fees. So if you see a broadcasted transaction to this address, set up your redeem script with a higher transaction fee than anyone else, and then your redeem transaction will go into the block and not the original one. This is basically not the only one. There are more than that, right? So you can find a lot of private keys on the blockchains. Most of them are not used anymore, but nonetheless, you see them. Interesting.
You can put replace by fee to zero, so that will avoid. If you put replace fee by zero, mm-hmm. you cannot make a level spend with an increased fee.
Yeah, but if you have a fee of zero, then you're probably not going to make it to mempool, right?
No, but you said you can beat them by the fee by sending a second transaction that has a higher fee.
Yeah.
But you can avoid this if the original transaction has replaced by fee set to zero.
Okay, I see. Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
I'm astonished that it's just 6 gigabytes of potential data. How much data can you put per transaction?
In the beginning, it was not limited, not really limited. Now I think it's something like 73 or 78 bytes or something like that in a single transaction. Or in a single transaction output, so, okay.
And how many transactions were there?
Oh, I do not have the total numbers. But, I mean, 6 gigabyte divided by 100 bytes, I mean... Yeah, like 600 million or something? I don't know. 6 gigabytes divided by 100 bytes? Pi mal daumen.
Could you understand correctly that people publish these private keys to have possible deniability? It could have been someone else because everybody has the private key.
Maybe that's one of the reasons, yeah. I can think of many reasons to do that. You can put images there as well, right? This one is an actually old one. So if you were smart and early enough to find this golden ticket on the blockchain, no idea what they got or if anyone found it in time, but you could have. So if you analyze all these 6 gigabytes of data, I mean, a lot of that is nonsense information, right? Like my child has his first tooth lost and I got married, here's my marriage certificate and stuff like that. So not very interesting stuff, but nonetheless, you always find, by exploring the blockchain, you always find some interesting information. But I'm not covering that here. Okay, thank you very much. And now for your questions. So one lesson to be learned is learn forth.
Is it on? It is on.
Yeah.
Is there a hall of shame or fame of scripts out there? Like, are there other research projects like this?
Actually, I tried to find people who did the same thing. I mean, this was just a fun project. I did that in my spare time and just when I had time for that. I'm pretty sure more people are doing that, but they are probably not talking about it or whatever. So, yeah, actually, I don't know. I can't give you an ultimate answer to that. But I think more people are doing that.
So I was just wondering, is there any obvious technique you could use to basically, so obviously forth is limited,
yeah.
Our Bitcoin script, which is effectively forth, sure. Is limited. And obviously the giant debate between Bitcoin and every other random blockchain is, do you support better, easier to use smart contract languages? Is there a way you could just use the current Bitcoin script to hack on something much better or easier to use that has some constraints? Because I've been tracking simplicity and whatnot, but
yeah.
Not too carefully, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, the Bitcoin script language is very limited in a way. There are limitations on how long a script can be. So you can do some simple logic. I think it would never be able to replace smart contract thingies from Ethereum or something like that. I think that's simply not, from my understanding, that's simply not possible with the Bitcoin script engine. But you can do more complicated things than you usually have available in your wallet software. But that requires you to write these transaction logic yourself. So it's not in a wallet, so you have to write a program to do transactions. But yeah, it's possible.
Sorry. Is there a reason for using a forth like language? Like, is it a LangSec, a language security reason, or just what Satoshi liked? I don't know. I mean, it's just compactness, you think?
Yeah, I think so as well. So I mean, this is part of the Bitcoin thing from the very beginning. So it's an essential part of how Bitcoin works. So I think there was a lot of thought going into how to design that. And the simplicity is an advantage. I mean, as you see, the usual transactions you use, they are fucking simple. They do not involve any complicated logic. But they still leave the room to do something more complicated. So I think it was a pretty smart choice. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.